Welcome to the number one source for information, news, and opinion on your Columbus Blue Jackets. This is CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Find us on the CBJ Radio SoundCloud page, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play Music, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Now here's your host, Bob McGilligan.
It's time to get back at it again already. Doesn't it just feel like we finished game one of this series between the Blue Jackets and the Tampa Bay Lightning? And it is time to go in game two this afternoon at 3 o'clock in Toronto at Scotiabank Arena. Welcome to CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. I'm Bob McElligott. And speaking of Telhio Credit Union, let me just tell you about the fine folks there and what they do. What they do is they put people over profit. They've done that since 1934. It's not just a way of doing business. It is a way of life for them. That's how their customers are treated. Top notch. Number one. That's how they see you. And if you're not a customer of Telhio Credit Union and you would like to know more about them, all you have to do is go to their website at telhio.org, surf around the site, click on the links. You can find all the information that you're looking for. The answers to all of your questions are right there. But if you can't find that answer, there's a live chat on the right side of the screen that's available during business hours, and somebody will pop up on the screen and talk to you right then and there. So why just settle for a normal bank when you can deal with a credit union that is going to put you first? Telhio Credit Union. Find them online at telhio.org. So the Blue Jackets are trailing this best of seven series with the Lightning, one game to none, and there's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of work to do for both teams in this series. They both know it. They both know how big that first game win was. It was an exuberant Tampa Bay Lightning team. It was a disappointed Columbus Blue Jackets team. But they both know that that's just one step, and it's really just one small step, as it turns out, in this entire process. So they'll get back to work here this afternoon and see if they can, you know, maybe get done in three periods for a change. Eric Erlandson of Tampa Bay. He is a Tampa Bay insider, Lightning insider. That's what he is. He's the Lightning insider. He's going to be joining me in just a little bit to tell you all about the Lightning. I want to get some views from him, too, about some of the Blue Jackets personnel, because he's had a chance to watch some of the Blue Jackets key players now in two playoff series in 2 years. So I want to hear his thoughts on some of that. But yesterday, even though I'm sure he was tired and I'm sure that he had plenty of work to do, I got a chance to catch up with the head coach of the Blue Jackets, John Tortorella. Torts, in all your years of hockey, and I know that's been more than a few, have you ever been involved in a game that was as drawn out and as long as that game one of that the other night against Tampa?
Yeah, I don't remember the, all the games. I know I've been involved in a number of games with a number of overtimes, never as many as this. No. And it's no, never.
Every year you talk about, especially in training camp, how you're conditioning your athletes and the mental conditioning. You love to talk about it. I love to hear about it, quite frankly. But the mental conditioning, especially when it comes to fatigue. And throughout the course of the season, when they're back-to-back, so there are trips where you're playing a lot of games in a short period of time, you talk about that. What did your team show you when it comes to their mental fatigue with the way they handled all of the periods of hockey that they played in that game?
Yeah, you got to remember, we just got through playing a couple overtimes. We play a very intense five-game series where the last game of the qualifying round, and we're the first one playing. It's the first playoff game. We had a really, really short window of a turnaround. So that's bumped into this also. The players have done nothing but impress me in how they've handled themselves. We've been on the right end. We've been on the wrong end at the end of the night as far as result. But I do watch that, Bobby, as far as how they handle themselves. They've done nothing but impress me.
Do you have any concern how that affects you ahead? I know we're talking about the fact that they're mentally conditioned, but as you just said, they've just played a ton of hockey in a short period of time.
Yeah, you can't. And that's where I think the mental part of the game takes over. And we are getting, we always talk, you and I have to look at short term, but also long term of what these players are and what we think they can become. We are getting plenty of opportunity to understand the mental toughness of the game. And we're right in the middle of it against a really good team. And we're coming back tomorrow afternoon to play. Certainly the physical part comes into play last night, but for me, it's more mental as far as just getting through it and not giving into it. And I think this team has been very impressive along the way.
Is Seth Jones human? Because he looks robotic. He just went out there shift after shift. I mean, for over an hour of ice time, he just went out and did the same job.
Yeah, he's a horse, as I said last night, and he could have kept on playing. He's going to get a ton of minutes tomorrow. Jonesy's kind of a laid-back guy, but he has really grown mentally as far as just simply overcoming things. And you can see how important he is to this hockey club. We saw that when he went down with injury towards the end of the year. He'll get a ton of minutes tomorrow.
Is he a throwback guy for you? Is he almost an old-time hockey guy? Not with the fighting part of it, obviously, but just whatever it takes.
He plays. And the thing is, there's no maintenance. He's a star. I think people are beginning to see on a stage, it's a little different without the crowd and all, but on the playoff stage, the qualifying round stage, he's a star in this league. I still don't think he gets enough credit for his willingness to defend the way he defends. I think people are beginning to take notice now.
I think another guy that they're taking notice of is your goaltender, Jonas Korpisalo, because he smashed a record. I mean, he had 86 saves in the game, which is – it's absolutely unthinkable under normal circumstances, which those were not. But, I was thinking this last night. Let's go back to earlier in the year when you had to bench him because he was smashing his stick out of sheer frustration. And look at him now. You want to talk about growth and calmness and just having that ooze through the entire team. I thought that he kind of set the tone last night. Do you agree?
Yeah, he is he's the backbone. I mean, we're not going all those overtimes. He doesn't make the saves that he makes. And he's turned into a pro. I think – when you go through some of the stuff he went through and some of the process he had to go through, the coaching staff, as far as how he was acting, that's part of it. And now you look at him, he is just in that position, he's just solid the way he handles them. Forget about all the saves he makes. He just looks solid. And I think that really helps the team in front of him.
Looked like Alexander Wennberg might have found some more favor with you in that game. You gave him an increased role. And what did you think of his play?
Wennberg.
Yes.
He is. He's come on here. He's been playing a little wing. He's been playing some center. I bounced him up around the lines in certain other situations and faceoffs in our end zone. Brad Larson has done some tape with him while we're out here trying to explain some things what we need out of him. I think he's responded nicely.
Also, I've got to ask you about Cam Atkinson because it's hard to believe that there were 60-plus shots in that game and he didn't have any of them. And I know he had that semi-breakaway where Hedman took him out of the play and he didn't get a shot on goal. But, you expect so much out of Cam, and he can be a star. He has been a star. What are you not seeing out of Cam Atkinson that you need right now?
Yeah, I'm not gonna get into critiquing a player that's struggling a little bit. I think Cam's trying. We're going to try to, it's us. It's for us to help him. He's helped this organization. He's helped this team with some big play in these type of situations. We're not going to get down. We're going to try to help him and see if we can get him pushed along.
You've had great balance here in the last couple of games. Even the game where you dressed seven defensemen, you still had balance in that game. You were able to use everybody. So this is normally a part where I'd say, man, after five overtimes, do you look for any fresh legs to get into your lineup? But I don't know if you want to disrupt that balance. How do you approach that as a coach?
Yeah, we meet at 2:00 today. I'll meet with the medical guys too to see what the bumps and bruises are. We've had meetings as coaches already this morning. We're going to look at the lineup. You always, you know, it's natural to think about fresh legs after the amount of hockey we've played here the past 5-6 days. Some guys are playing really well. Some guys are struggling. So we'll make our decisions as we get ready for that 3 o'clock game tomorrow.
I know you don't care what comes from the outside usually, but you know, I've read some stuff about Tampa, and they're talking about their resolve and how they hung with it until they got the win. And I'm sure they're extremely glad to beat you guys because you swept them last year. And, you know, that's a step for them. There's no question about that. But the way I look at it is, you know, again, there's a high-powered offensive team on one side. There's a team that has struggled at times to score goals on the other side. And your team hung with them, and you fought with them, and you did it for 6 hours, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. And again, I think that says a lot about your group. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. And we'll be there 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, ready to do it again. And that's how we go about our business. We're not too concerned about what's going on over there. We'll be ready to face off at 3 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
You going to get it done before 9 o'clock at night this time, or
it was funny. The Carolina coaches were across the hallway. I kind of poked my head in there. I said, "We're trying like hell, boys." Because I know they wanted the game to get over so they could play. So who knows? It's you know what, Bobby? It's been great for this team in the series that we played against Toronto, one of the more exciting series of the qualifiers and all the stuff that went on in it. Last night's game, this is all good stuff. And again, we as a coaching staff and organization are proud of the guys. We're very impressed in how they've handled themselves.
Hey, by the way, last thing for you, because you just said we, and I talked about this during the game last night. Well, I tried to find anything to talk about that I could during the game last night, Torts. I was all alone for 6 hours. But you always tell me at this time of the year that, you know, during the season, it is you're not against the players, but it's about teaching and it's about instructing and sometimes conflict. But in the playoffs, you always talk about it being a we thing. You're together with your players. How much more together do you feel with your players right now in that bubble?
Yeah, and the bubble helps it. The bubble's pretty cool. There's a lot of cool things about the bubble and some things that suck. But that type of stuff of being together, and I always call it being with them during the playoffs, it's been pretty important. You become close, you know, and some of the momentum swings that we've gone through so far in this tournament has brought us closer, I think. So it's been a great experience so far. Hopefully we can get something done tomorrow.
Does your core group, have they finally figured that out, that if they can get you to the postseason, you're more on their side?
I think so. I hope so. Sometimes.
Well, you look great sitting there outside and enjoying the weather today. So, and I'm sure you're beaten. I know you have a lot of work to do. So thanks, Torts. As always, I appreciate it, and best of luck.
Thanks, Bobby. Be well.
That's the man that's pushing all the buttons, and many of those buttons are the right buttons. It will be interesting to see if he does make any changes tonight just to try to get some fresh legs in the lineup. It'll also be interesting to see what Jonas Korpisalo looks like tonight after having to make those 85 saves just 2 days ago. And I'm sure that carries over somewhat, but again, as Torch said, and as we talked about, it's mental toughness and finding a way to push yourself to another level, even when you think that you can't. And that is really what John Tortorella is good at doing with his team, getting them to a level that not even they know that they can achieve. So now that we've basically heard the Blue Jackets' standpoint on today's game, and as this series, their perspective from the series as it continues here, let's go to today's game preview. It's being brought to you by Stanley Steamer. Get back to clean. Eric Erlandson is the Tampa Bay Lightning insider. And, well, he's like the rest of us. He's on the outside of the bubble looking in, but he's very good and very in tune with his Tampa Bay Lightning team. I had a chance to catch up with him yesterday and get his viewpoint of that game one and also a pretty good breakdown of the personnel going head-to-head in this series. Well, Eric, it must be the playoffs because you and I are talking again. The second straight year, it's the Blue Jackets and the Tampa Bay Lightning in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Look, nobody would have predicted what happened last year. And then after one game, I don't know if anybody can predict the heck of a lot of anything in this series. Game one going 5 overtimes, but this time it was the Lightning that came out with the victory. What were you thinking as you were sitting there and watching that game go on and on and on and on?
Well, the first thing I think is, how are the players doing this? I mean, this is so unprecedented. I mean, you get guys playing 60 minutes of ice time and 50 minutes of ice time. It's just what these guys go through is just a dedication and everything else. It's absolutely amazing. And then you think, how is one going to get in? I mean, Korpisalo was just so dialed in for so long, and Vasilevskiy didn't face as much, but he was locked in. And you're just thinking, how is anybody going to get one past these guys? It's going to take a double deflection like the first goal that ended up being Dubois' goal. That was how it was going to end. And you're just dinner time's coming. When is this – like dinner time was 4 hours ago. When is this going to end? It was just – it was an incredible, incredible ride to kind of watch and witness.
Watching the Lightning and the way they celebrated after that game – well, first of all, when you play for 6 hours, you're really happy that it's over. There's no question about that. But I got the sense that they were just so relieved they were able to beat the Blue Jackets, because they're on the verge of five straight playoff losses to the same team, a team that I'm sure they feel that they are more talented than. And it looked like a sense of relief to me. Did you get that sense?
I think it was a sense of relief for ending the game, as you mentioned. Geez, you know, you've been going since 3 o'clock. And for the work that they put in that game, I mean, the puck possession dominance that you have through that amount of time. I mean, the only period that was even, I think, was the third overtime when the shot attempts were 17 each. You know, to finally get the breakthrough and to show that the patience that they had put on display, they didn't put themselves in too many bad positions like they did last year. I think that was the sense of relief that this worked. We stayed with our game. It was a very patient and methodical approach to how they wanted to play this game and to get the reward. I think that was the relief, as much as finally being able to stop talking about having lost to the Blue Jackets. I mean, we've all been asking these questions since September of this team. And, you know, to me, it almost looked like, you know, you think of galvanizing moments for a team, you know, to come together and just to watch that celebration on the ice. And Braden Point, usually a guy who's pretty subdued in his celebrations. We see it every now and then. But to see the emotion come out of him, and if you see any of the still frames of pictures, I mean, Mikhail Sergachev, his waist is about head level on a couple of guys, and Mitchell Stevens is about the same on the other end of it. It was one of those moments that for Lightning fans and for Lightning players that they'll remember forever.
I was a little bit surprised that Braden Point won the game, and not because he's not a great player, of course, but because I just felt that was one of those games where, look, every time Eric Chernak had the puck on his stick, I was nervous. Mitchell Stevens had the puck on his stick, I was nervous. You know what I'm saying? I just felt like it was one of those games. It was going to end with a fourth line guy or a third pair defenseman winding up with a big goal, but it turned out to be the top guy again.
But look how it had to happen. I mean, Kucherov had two of his shots blocked. The second one hit Gavrikov up high, opening up that lane. I mean, Columbus did such a great job of really clogging the slot area and not letting shots through. So it finally took – it wasn't a double doink goal, but it was a double blocked goal that ended up and giving Point that space. But look, and he even said after the game, he was just putting on net. He didn't care where it was going. He wasn't trying to aim it. And that's kind of how the game was going to have to end. But you're right. Usually those games are just tailor suited to somebody that hadn't played much. It's, you know, the Peter Klima effect, sitting there for three overtimes and then coming off the bench for his only shift and scoring the game winning goal. It had that recipe.
You know, last year, when the Lightning went up against the Blue Jackets, they went up against Sergei Bobrovsky. They knew they were going up against a Vezina winner, multiple Vezina winner. They knew what they were in for in goal. I don't know if they knew exactly what they were in for with Jonas Korpisalo, but I would imagine they realized in that first game that task of beating the goaltender might not be much easier this year against the Blue Jackets.
Well, and they've had success against him during the regular season, right? Like, his numbers weren't very good against Tampa Bay and his few starts that he's had against him. But, you know, anybody who watched the series against Toronto and just how terrific he was in that first game particularly knew that this was going to be it wasn't the name recognition, but you could see the game in Korpisalo. And they know now. If they didn't, they certainly know now. I mean, he stopped 85 shots. It's still mind-boggling to me that we're sitting here talking about a goalie who stopped 85 shots and lost the game. But if he's going to be that dialed in for the rest of the series, boy, the Lightning certainly are up against it in terms of trying to find some consistent scoring.
I want to ask you, as an outsider of this market, I want to ask you about Seth Jones, what you see, when Seth plays. I mean, you saw him for 65 minutes in game one, so there's a great sample.
Did he ever
size.
Leave the ice?
I don't think. One time, very quickly, and then he was back. But John Tortorella, you know, told me that he thinks that Seth is finally getting recognition on a big stage. And ironically, there are no people in the stands, but everybody is watching, and everybody saw what Seth was able to do for the Blue Jackets in that first game. We know what he does on an everyday basis. When he got hurt this year, to be honest with you, Eric, that's when things started to dip big time for the Blue Jackets. But as a guy on the outside looking in at this team, what do you see when you watch Seth Jones play?
I see a lot of Victor Hedman. You know, he shoots from the other side, of course, as a righty, but this the way that he controls the game and his ability to read the plays and jump up in the play. I mean, there was almost a situation in overtime there where it was Zach Werenski down in the corner trying to feed a charging Seth Jones coming at the net. I mean, it's that sort of recognition and that skating ability. But that's why I think there are a lot of comparisons to Victor Hedman, because of how much ice they can kind of gobble up in a short period of time, and how much they can, you know, make that first. They can either make that really good, clean first pass out of his own end, or he can skate the puck out of danger. He's that good at what he's doing. So yeah, there's no doubt that if people and certainly people in hockey are aware of who Seth Jones is and the importance he has to that Columbus team, you take him out of lineup, it's like taking a Victor Hedman out of lineup. And we saw what happened when Victor wasn't healthy at the start of that series last year. And of course, he missed games 3 and 4 of that series. When you have a guy back there that can log the minutes and the important minutes that those guys do, you take him out of the lineup, it is a huge, huge loss. And I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but to watch him on this stage, and I haven't seen the ratings for the game yesterday, at least from an NBC standpoint. I'm curious to see how high those ratings were, especially as the game go on. Boy, did they get a large dose of what Seth Jones means. And look, I'm still shocked that he didn't end up with the Tampa Bay Lightning. They passed on him in the draft back in 2013. Can you imagine Seth Jones paired alongside Victor Hedman?
I don't want to see that. I mean, I was hoping like probably everybody on the Blue Jackets side that Victor Hedman wouldn't dress for game one after he got injured in the round robin. But I knew, because he's that kind of guy, right? If there's any way he can play, he's going to play. He shows up, he plays a ton of minutes in that game. And you're right, last year when he left the series, it was a difference maker in the series for the Blue Jackets. So yeah, and that's why I wanted to ask you about Seth, because you do watch Victor Hedman all the time, and you can – I think if you watch a guy like that, I think you get more of an appreciation for what Seth does, don't you?
Absolutely. You know, and it's not the same comparison, but when Anton Stralman came to Tampa Bay, and I know he was in Columbus for a little bit, he hadn't really found out who he was. So when they signed Stralman as a free agent, you were like, okay, I kind of know who Anton Stralman is. Okay, I'm looking at the metric numbers. Okay, he's a good possession guy. But then you watch him play every day. You watch him out there on a nightly basis and just see the presence that they can have. I think that's a case with a guy like that. If you don't watch him on an everyday basis, you don't have a full appreciation for him. And let's face it, we got to watch him for 2.5 games last night. So, you know, you see these players come through in these type of games. Yeah, it is an eye-opener and, again, a testament to these players to be able to be at the top of their level for that long in the fourth longest game in NHL history.
You mentioned Anton Stralman. Ironically, the guy that made him into who he was when he came to the Lightning was John Tortorella when he was with the New York Rangers, because he stopped at the Rangers before between Columbus and Tampa. You worked with John Tortorella for a long time. You know him so well, and you know what he does. You know, I know he's a huge fan favorite in Tampa. I don't know if a little bit of that luster was worn off after that sweep last year. I think people might have not liked him as much as they did before that. But you know exactly what he can do. And now, especially, you just saw both teams play essentially a triple header to get this series started. You know, from your dealings with John Tortorella, the motivational part of him and the way he gets his teams to respond and come back, how important could that be in the rest of this series?
It's huge. It's absolutely huge. You know, you hear John talk and he mentions all the time, now you get to the playoffs, now it's about the players, now it's about the players. And he's right. It's about the players, but coaches have a huge factor in it. And the way that he has, I mean, he can be gruff. We all know that. We know the sound clips, but you know, you work with him every day. I worked with him every day for 8 years. You see that different side of who he is as a coach and as a person. And his ability to reach into his players and get the most out of them and make them understand, you know, like all those minutes that those guys logged yesterday, when you had two guys at 60, two guys at 50, they're not tired, right? He'll tell them, you're not tired. And he would tell the media, stop talking them into being tired. You can't do it. But I'll give you the two really good examples of how he can do this. And you saw it firsthand after the game four loss to Toronto. Back in 2004, they lost a game to the Philadelphia Flyers, game six of the Eastern Conference Finals. Tampa Bay was leading that game with 2 minutes to go. And Keith Primeau ties the game with 1.5 minutes. And Simon Gagné wins it in overtime to force a game seven. And you're like, there's no way. The emotion, it's too much. You can't recover from that emotion. There's no way you're going to come out. Well, they come out and really took control of that game. They end up winning against Philadelphia and go on to the Stanley Cup final. And then that same series against Calgary, they lose game five at home in overtime. Oleg Saprykin scores an overtime goal. They got to go back to the Sea of Red. They're going up to Calgary. You don't have just Calgary hungry for a cup. You don't have just Alberta hungry for a cup. You've got the entire nation of Canada, except for Leafs fans, looking for a cup, and they have to face all of that, and they walk into that Sea of Red, and they go out and they win game six in double overtime. Marty St. Louis game winner, and they come back home and they win game seven. He just has a way of making sure that players don't get caught up in the moment, and everything is really on a micro level instead of looking at everything from a macro level.
How do you compare him to the way that John Cooper coaches? And I ask you this because I thought last year that John Tortorella kind of took it to John Cooper. I felt like the adjustments he was trying to make, it just wasn't working. And it was almost like and it wasn't just him. I guess it was a team too. They didn't know what to do and how to overcome things. How much do you think that he and his staff learned from that? And how do you compare those two guys as far as the way they run and motivate their teams?
Well, they're definitely different in the way that they motivate. You know, John Tortorella is blunt and to the point. And I think you talk to any of the players that have had him through his years, they look back at it now, they appreciate it. I mean, I saw a comment from, I think, Chris Dingman today. He said, if the Maple Leafs fans and the staff want to get certain players to get motivated, hire John Tortorella if he's a free agent. Bring him in. You'll get a different type of player. So he can motivate players in that way. I think with John Cooper, he does it in more of a looser sort of way. Like, he's able to get his point across, but he does it in a manner in which it's not as blunt. It's maybe more subtle. He'll crack a joke and you know, that kind of way to kind of get the player's attention. But I also think that John Cooper learned a ton from that series last year because of what the Blue Jackets did to slow down a dynamic offensive attack. I mean, it's an offense that we hadn't seen in 20-plus years, going back to the 90s of the days of Jágr and Lemieux, the numbers they put up offensively. And they were just stifled. They couldn't get through the middle of the ice. They couldn't use one of their signature plays, and that's pull up at the circle and wait for that second wave to come in because Columbus was ready for it, and they took that away. And then they couldn't get in on the forecheck. I mean, they took every strength the Lightning had away from them. So you come into this year now, and starting in September, the motivation, the mantra was going to be play more disciplined, take less risks, stay out of the box. They didn't do a very good job of that this year. I think they were third most in penalties, but that was been the mantra ever since. And I think this pause that we've had since March until we got to this point, I think the coaching staff had plenty of time, obviously, to dissect everything, and they probably went back and looked at that series a number of times. What can we do differently? Not necessarily to play the Columbus Blue Jackets, they didn't know, but in their approach to how their game. And I think you saw that on full display yesterday. They did not force plays. They did not panic with the puck on their own end, looking for a play up the middle. There were a lot of times where they just flipped it out or they chipped it off the glass, made the smart, safe play. And I think they learned a lot of that because of how the way last year's playoffs transpired.
How much different are they when you add players like Barclay Goodrow and Pat Maroon and Blake Coleman, guys that got a little bit more grit and sandpaper to their game?
Yeah, it just gives them a different look. You know, they were a speed and skill team last year. All their size was on their back end. They didn't have a lot amongst their four groups. I think Alex Killorn was the biggest guy at 6'1". Well, you bring in a Maroon and his ability to kind of wear down other teams on the other end. I mean, you can't take the puck off of Pat Maroon when he has it behind the net. Good luck trying to get around the big rig there and stealing the puck away from him. Goodrow comes in. He's a feisty kind of guy. He's a sandpaper kind of guy. Again, hard to play against. Blake Coleman, 20-goal scorer. He hasn't found any of the offense yet with the team, but he kind of has that same approach, that relentlessness that he has. And when you have guys that are irritating to play against, that are hard to play against, it just changes the look. It changes the dynamic of what you can put out there on the ice. So now the Lightning can put different lines in different situations. And it's definitely not a coincidence that in every single period of that game yesterday, we're talking eight periods, who was the starting line for the Lightning? It was Yanni Gourde, Barclay Gaudreau, and Blake Coleman. Those are the tone setters. They did it in the round-robin games. So that's the different element that they can bring to kind of set an energy type of tone. And they were the ones that actually had the tying goal there to start the third.
Does Steven Stamkos make an appearance in this series, in your opinion?
That's the $91 question. It's hard to tell. You know, we were told back on July the 11th that he was supposed to be a full participant by the time they got to done with training camp. He wasn't. Then he practiced for a couple of days, and then he didn't. My guess is that there's a chance, depending on how long this series does go on, that he could. But that's just kind of an educated guess with no ability to kind of be at practice and see what's going on or anything like that. It's just hard to get a gauge on it.
I know, we're all flying blind now. I mean,
yeah.
I never appreciated going to practice. I always thought, man, I got to go watch practice again. Now I'd kill to go watch practice and figure out what's going on.
Yes.
Last thing for you. Do you expect this series to be tight? Not five overtime games, obviously, but do you expect it to be nip and tuck here the whole way through?
I do. You know, that's the way Columbus wants to play, and now we know that's the way Tampa Bay can play. I mean, you know, again, that was a game Tampa Bay didn't lead until – they won the game, right? They never led in that game whatsoever. So they're going to maintain their patient approach. They have the ability to open it up if they can, but there's no reason to think that we're not going to see a bunch of 3-2 results in this series, especially if Korpisalo is going to be dialed in, with Vasilevsky dialed in. I mean, that stop he made on that funky bounce that came off the wall on Eric Robinson was just an incredible save. You know, so if those guys are going to be locked in and these two teams are going to be tight defensively, and again, I give so much credit to Columbus. They blocked 62 shots, Bob. 62 shots. That's an incredible number of blocked shots, and that gives you an idea of how dedicated they are to, defense. So, yeah, I expect it to be a nip and tuck series the whole way. I'm not expecting any 5-4, even 4-3 games. I think we're going to see 3-2, 2-1 for a good chunk of the series.
I think David Savard might have blocked 48 of those himself before it was
plus five more from the beard.
Hey, and that Vasilevsky stop he made on Eric Robinson, if the Tampa Bay Rays were looking there, they might want somebody to play the hot corner.
That's right. Hey, they could use a shortstop. Willie Adames has kind of had a little bumbling here to start the season.
Eric, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Great to talk to you. And I'm with you. I hope we don't play five overtimes again, I hope it continues to be an exciting series.
Yeah, it should be fun. Thanks, Bob, for having me.
He is the Lightning Insider. You can find him on Twitter, Eric Erlandson, joining me here today. So the Blue Jackets and the Lightning getting set for the second game of this best-of-seven series. The puck is going to drop at 3 o'clock this afternoon from Scotiabank Arena. Our pregame coverage on the Blue Jackets radio network will start at 2 o'clock this afternoon. And like I said, maybe we'll just go 2 hours and 38 minutes per normal and not 6 hours like the other day. But whatever it takes for the Blue Jackets, they've got to come out. They've got to give a strong performance. They've got to get themselves back into this series. The last thing they want to do is fall behind this good Tampa Bay Lightning team 2-0. So this is a very key game early in the series for the Blue Jackets. And I know they've played a ton of hockey lately. I know that their backs are not against the wall because it's not that point in the series, but they could be very quickly if they don't win this game. It'll feel like their backs are against the wall. So great opportunity for the Blue Jackets. And how can you count this team out from a bounce back? How can you? I mean, I can't do it. I just watched what they did against the Toronto Maple Leafs, where they gave up 3 goals in 4 minutes and lost in overtime. And they came back less than 48 hours later and they shut out the Maple Leafs. There is no quit in this team. That's the absolute truth. There is no quit. And they won't be quitting today as they try to even the series at 1 game apiece. Again, the puck hits the ice at 3 o'clock. I'll talk to you starting at 2 o'clock with the pregame coverage on the Blue Jackets radio network. I'd like to thank again Eric Erlandson for joining me and also Blue Jackets head coach John Tortorella. But, of course, I want to thank you for being here and getting ready for some more matinee hockey with the Blue Jackets and the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's going to do it for today's edition of CBJ in 30, presented by Telhio Credit Union. Until tomorrow, I'm Bob McElligott saying so long.